हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Top of 60. The Supreme Lord in His incarnation is Parasuram, worships Lord Shiva in loving reciprocation by advertising Lord Shiva's glories. 89-90. Although Krishna is personally present at the churning of the nectar from the milk ocean, He and the rulers of the universe chose to worship Lord Shiva, the life and soul of Gauri. Lord Shiva collected and drank the terrible poison, which thereafter became his ornament. He was then ceremonially bathed in the presence of everyone assembled and was glorified with floods of praise. In the presence of Lord Krishna, the demigods had no need to fear destruction from the hala-hala poison churned from the ocean of milk. Krishna chose, however, not to counteract the poison itself, but to give Lord Shiva an opportunity to show his prowess. The Supreme Lord and the Prajapatis honored Lord Shiva with Vedic hymns and other prayers, entreating him to save them. The request was so strongly presented that Lord Shiva took the risk of drinking all the poison, ignoring the objections of his dear wife Gauri. The demigods praised Lord Shiva for a feat even Lord Vishnu had not performed. From then on, the blue marks made on Lord Shiva's throat by the poison became renowned as his unique ornament.
Took the risk. Yes. Is there a risk that he would die from drinking?
Well, it's a lot of poison.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Yeah. But I mean, I'm just thinking.
See, there's this element called pastime.
Okay. Good. That's what I wanted to know. Yes.
You know, because just like it's Krishna right. could have. Adjusted it without drinking it.
Yeah.
But Shiva, that's how he does things, right? You know, so then that becomes unique. So that stands out in that way. You know, so then Krishna, he gave the glory to his devotee. Yes. Yes, he's a kind of an avatar. I mean, anybody who goes around naked with garlands of bones and other kinds of crazy flowers and stuff, then that we would call avatu. Jainatai. How are you? Good.
They provided that they're spiritually advanced, not just crazy.
Yes. Yes.
Otherwise, we can advance very quickly.
Yes. Yeah. But avatut means he's not following the rules because he's unaffected by not following, because he's on another platform, so it doesn't matter. You know, it's just like, let's say that you are on dry land, you don't have to worry about wearing a, life vest, yes. You know, so you could say he's an avatut. That's because you're in another category, you know. Okay. So Nityananda, you see that tendency is there, right? But you see it maximum in Lord Shiva. So it's just the natural, the expansion. So then you have the subtle at this end, and you have the more obvious at the other. That's why you see sometimes, you know, he'll do, or Nityananda will do. But at the same time, the interesting thing is they're the one that establishes the religious principles. You know? So they can establish them, and they can also function without them. Well, everybody else needs them.
this is the distinction between religion as an elevating element or as a social construct that they don't
need. Because a social construct they don't need, no, plus exactly. They don't require them to elevate because they're already elevated. So generally, when preaching, one follows the rules. One doesn't not follow, because otherwise people can't follow what you do. Like Rishabhdev, then acting in the way he did, then another yogi seeing that was impressed, and then he decided to start a religious path based on what he had thought he understood from Rishabhdev. And therefore you end up with the Jains. Right? So it's totally atheistic in that. So this is not important. It means you have the Lord and the devotees. So generally the devotees set example how to behave so that it's good for your advancement. But it's not that they don't preach to someone who may be qualified.
Yes.
But generally, they won't, because who will understand what they say? So we only have a few, avadhuts, you know, in the line and all that. So, It's not. Probably take it off the rug just in case the bottom is hot. Everyone's cool with that. Otherwise, move it. Maybe move it a bit farther back. Yeah, or even on the edge. Yeah. That way it gets lighter by the time it's over here. Actually, you can stick it out on the road. Yeah, you can keep the mosquitoes off the elephants. So Vamsidas Babaji and a few others, that there's generally not many that follow that path. Yes.
Maybe about that. Lord Kishore Das Babaji, he may be considered also in that category?
Not really. He's a Babaji. Right? Because Babajis have less rules to follow, because they're not really taking part in the social system. Right? So it's not that they have much they're gaining from the social system, so they're not part of it. You know, there's not the formality and respect that there is like with the sannyasis. So they can function as they generally more please. They don't have that formality. So that's there. So many in our line may be Babaji's. But it's not that they're not preaching to, you know, in this opportunity.
And avadhu, being very elevated, we consider that they know what they're doing.
Yes.
So what's the specific point? Lord Rishabhadeva was preaching to the yogis about the subtle objects.
No, he wasn't preaching. He was just performing his... he was just doing what he does out in the forest, and somebody saw him. And then from that construed their own religion. He wasn't instructing that person, just the person happened to observe him.
What's the point of being an avatar?
You don't get involved in what's going on here. You just absorb the Lord's pastimes. You know, it's an individual taste. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like that. That means our line is that we take part in the process. Right? In other words, those who don't follow the standard process, we don't use them as example. Just like the Braj Basis, we don't use them as an example. That's all. They're in their own category. So the Braj Basis, Abhuts, they're in their own category. So we respect them, we deal properly, but we don't get involved with them. The Puranas sing of Lord Hari's compassion towards Lord Hara. You surely know all this and more, O thoughtful sage. To recall these glories, you need to only exercise your memory. Sri Pariket said, O dear mother, affectionate protector of your son, Narada bowed down to his spiritual master, Lord Brahma. And when Lord Brahma saw his son Narada eager to set off for Kailash, Brahma then told him something more. Because Brahma is omniscient within the material universe, he knew that Narada wanted to go to Mount Kailash, Lord Shiva's abode in the universe. Noticing that Narada was glancing down from Brahma Lok in the direction of Kailash, Brahma decided to suggest a better idea. 93. Sri Brahma said, Kuvera once earned the gratitude of Lord Shiva by devotedly worshipping him. From then on, within this universe, Lord Shiva has submitted to Kuvera's authority on Kuvera's Mount Kailash. Lord Shiva, the husband of Uma, lives there as the guardian of Kuvera's side of the heavenly sphere. Accompanied by suitable attendants, he shows but a small fraction of his opulence. Kuvera, the appointed treasurer of heaven, rules the northeast. Pleased with Kuvera, Lord Shiva, despite his own elevated position, takes up menial service as Kuvera's guard. Lord Shiva's wife, Uma, and several of his associates and servants accompany Lord Shiva in Kailash, which, compared with his eternal abode outside the universe, is modest in opulence and entourage. Brahma replies, if you go see Lord Shiva on Kuvera's Kailash, you will not be able to understand fully how much greater Lord Shiva is than I. 95. Just as the personality of Godhead, Krishna, brought under control by the devotion of servants like me, resides on my planet, and in heaven and elsewhere, Lord Shiva lives in Kailash, displaying suitable pastimes. 96. Now let me tell you the opinion of the Vayu Purana. The abode of Sri Mahadev lies outside the seven coverings of the universe. In contrast to all the planets inside the shells, planets that are temporary products of material nature, this abode of Lord Shiva's is not a creation of Maya. In Shiva Loka, there is no unhappiness. That world is attained by the best of Lord Shiva's devotees, the ones who understand him to be non-different from Sri Krishna. Not the Shaivites or Karmis or Jnanis or who worship Lord Shiva as the independent supreme controller, right? So those who are the Maya bodies and these others who worship him, they don't attain. Those who worship him, understanding him as he's a devotee of Krishna and non-different from Krishna, they go there.
Yes.
Right? There'll be so many places. Right? There's Kailash within the universe. There's his place within the Himalayas. I think that's Kuvera's place. Then on the... Didn't somebody mention the other day? Four different places.
One is in the shell of a Ahankar.
Okay.
Within the material
universe. Yeah. The other's beyond. Like that. So there's so many places. Just like the different demigods, they have their different places. Like Indra has his place in the higher planets, heavenly planet, but also in the local mountains that he's situated in the east. You know, like that. So they have many times different places where they're situated.
So different types of devotees, they reach different abodes.
Well, where he lives with Kuvera and Kailash, then generally all those individuals would be yakshas. Like that. So they would be all his associates. So generally you have that more of the kind of guna aspect. Right? Because he's very kind, because the Lord's taking care of, you know, so many, the demigods take care of, but then there's those that nobody wants to take care of. So therefore Shiva takes care of. Right? That's the... Yeah. '97 to '98. Eternal and full of happiness, that abode is absolutely real. It can be attained by the best of Lord Shiva's servants. There, Lord Shiva, served by the most exalted regalia, reveals himself in his full splendor, surrounded by companions who share opulence and beauty equal to his. As his personal deity, he worships Lord Shankarsana, non-different from himself. What amazing wonders does Lord Shiva in this manifestation not display? In his original abode, Lord Shiva displays his full opulence, including ever-existing palaces and airplanes, and his unequaled personal assets of religion, wealth, sense enjoyment, liberation, and devotion to the Supreme Lord. Right, so all the Purusharthas are all there in greatness. His emblems of rulership, such as his jewelry, chamara, fans, and royal umbrella, surpass those of Brahma and other demigods. On Shiva Loka, Lord Shiva always worships the personality of Godhead in his form as Sri Shankarsana, who has thousands of serpent hoods. Both Lord Shankarsana and his expansion, Lord Shiva, are incarnations of the Supreme Godhead, and so they are non-different. When the time comes for the material universe to be annihilated, Rudra, the destroyer, appears from Sri Shankarsana. That Rudra is the specific aspect of Lord Shiva, who presides over the material mode of ignorance. Everyone who sees Lord Shiva worshipping Shankarsana, one expansion of the Supreme worshipping another, becomes astonished, especially when Lord Shiva dances in ecstasy and offers wonderful prayers. Lord Shiva's worship of Sri Shankarsana can also be seen in the earthly planetary system in Ilavritavarsha, as Sukadev Goswami describes in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 17.
Lord Shiva worships
Shankarsana
because that's the origin?
That's his origin. Yeah, just like Balaram worships Krishna. Like that. So that's the natural. You know, and Pradyumna Adi Rudra are respectful to Shankarsana. So then that, see, is you have that aspect where you're dealing as Vishnu Tattva. But then you have this other aspect, which is that what you're dealing with, the material nature, the mode of ignorance, the control of that. So Krishna does that as Lord Shiva. So there's a non-difference because it's an aspect of the Lord, and who's the Lord. But there is a transformation. Right? So they're non-different, but there's a transformation, just like yogurt and milk are non-different. It's still, yogurt is a transformation of milk. Right? But when you get up to this platform of Sadashiva, then it's just another flavor, basically. But, yeah, that makes sense. So because Balaram, then he has all these aspects within him. But then you see in Narayan and the Vaikuntha planets and the expansion there through Sankarsana. And then the other way of going through the Purusha avatars. And then so the extreme of that on one side of that line is Sesha. Right? But in this other line then it'll be Lord Shiva. You have the power to go there because you have pure devotion for him. Therefore, go, take shelter of him, and see the real mercy of Krishna. Because Narada respects Lord Shiva properly, as an expansion non-different from Lord Krishna, and therefore loves Lord Shiva with spontaneous devotion, there is no bar to his entering Shiva Loka. Narada is to go there and take shelter of Lord Shiva by offering respects and praise. You will be able to see the mercy of Krishna in the ecstasy and opulences of Lord Shiva. Right? Does that make sense? So when you're on this level, then you don't make that distinction, because then you see, like Advaitacharya, you don't distinguish these Mahavishnu or Sadashiva. They're just different flavors of the same. Does that make sense? Sri Parikshit said, "My dear mother, after Narada received these instructions, he departed for Shivaloka with joy, joyful anticipation, chanting Shiva Krishna." The gist of Brahma's advice to Narada is that he should have faith in Lord Shiva as non-different from Lord Sri Krishna. Even though this advice was familiar to Narada, he was inspired to hear it. He welcomed the opportunity Brahma was giving him to show the world the extent of Lord Shiva's glories. He was also curious about what he would find when he arrived at Shiva Lokas. This ends the second chapter of part one of Srila Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, titled Divya in Heaven. Lord Brahma? No, that's Haridas time.
Haridas.
Right, so you have there for the three Prabhus, right? Then he's saying expanding from Sankarshan, then is that the Devata aspect of Rudra. Right? And he's the one that then directly deals with the mode of ignorance and is, you know, and destroys everything. Mm.
In the spiritual planets, we see that one Vishnu Tattva can worship another Vishnu Tattva, like Shiva.
Yeah, that's a problem. No? Not a problem. Yeah.
It's very common,
except
worship something.
Yeah, the point is one's always respectful to one's source. So Krishna, that's why there's the bringing out of the element of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he is the original Personality of Godhead. So all other expansions of him are aspects of his personality, though unlimited. Because each of his qualities are unlimited, so even if they're manifesting certain ones, it's still unlimited. But they all have that respect towards Krishna, because he's the origin. So technically there's Krishna, and that's all there is. But because of the personal aspect of the individuality, then there's that relationships and interaction between Krishna and his expansions, energies, and like that. Is that, so they're non-different, but different. Yes, inconceivable. I mean, we're non-different, but different. You know, one of the big differences is how small we are. And we remain that size. Krishna's unlimitedly getting bigger at every moment, right? But we're staying the same size internally. Right? So that's the thing. He's the biggest. We're the smallest. Right? But in his glories, he's still smaller than the smallest. So that means he's smaller than us. Yes, you know. Yeah. We don't want to disturb too much. Chapter 3. Prapanchatita. Beyond the material world. Right? Then you find yourself living in Jersey. Verse breakdown. Narada visits Shiva Loka, 1 through 8. Narada praises Lord Shiva, who becomes angry. Right? He's known for that. So 9 through 19. Narada argues that Shiva is very dear to Krishna. 20 to 31. Narada praises Parvati, 32 to 34. Lord Shiva refutes Narada's praise, 35 to 41. Lord Shiva sends Narada to the residence of Vaikuntha. Parvati praises the goddess Shri. Narada wants to visit Vaikuntha. Shiva reminds Narada that Krishna is present on earth. Lord Shiva praises Prahlad. Okay, now which direction will it go? Stay tuned.
Yes.
In this chapter, Narad Muni travels beyond Atita, the material cosmic manifestation, Prapancha. The word Prapancha stems from Pancha Mahabhuta, the five gross elements of creation. So far, Narad Muni has interacted with finite jivas in the material nature. Footnote 1. Lord Kapila says in Srimad Bhagavatam, Ya pancha bhuta rachite rahita sharire channo yatendriya gunarta chid atmako hum. I am separated from the Supreme, Lord, because of my being in this material body, which is made of five elements. And therefore my qualities and senses are being misused, even though I am essentially spiritual. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:31-14. Srila Prabhupada comments, the entire process of devotional service is to purify oneself of this contamination of material nature and put oneself on the spiritual platform, where he is qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vedas, it is said that the living entity is always free. Asango hyayam purusha. The living entity is liberated. His material contamination is temporary, and his actual position is that he is liberated. This liberation is achieved by Krishna consciousness, which begins from the point of surrender. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:31-14 per point. To continue? No. Now the search for the greatest object of Krishna's mercy narrows into the domain of liberated beings, beginning with Lord Shiva. While Lord Brahma is in almost all cases an ordinary living entity, Shiva occupies his own tattva entirely. Thus Lord Shiva's position is constitutionally higher than that of Lord Brahma, although Lord Shiva appeared as the son of Brahma. So that's not so amazing, because Krishna appears as the son of Jivas, so it's not a big deal. Shiva is considered the ideal Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. Like Brahma, he is the head of his own Vaishnav Sampradaya, and along with Brahma and Prahlad, who appears later in this chapter, he is one of the 12 Mahajanas. Footnote 2. Yamaraj states in Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma, Bhagavan Narada, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila, Swayambhuva Manu, Prahlad Maharaj, Janaka Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami, and I myself know the real religious principles. My dear servants, this transcendental religious principle, which is known as Bhagavad Dharma, or surrender unto the Supreme Lord, and love for him, is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. It is very confidential and difficult for ordinary human beings to understand. But if by chance one fortunately understands it, he is immediately liberated. And thus he returns home back to Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:320-21. The first sight Srila Narad Muni beholds upon leaving the Prapancha is that of Lord Shiva serving his deity, Lord Sankarsana, in ecstasy. This forms the basis of how the devotional mood and activities on Shiva Loka compare to those in heaven and earth. Narada visits Shiva Loka. 1-8. Sri Parikit said, arriving in Shiva Loka, from a distance the sage Narada saw Lord Shiva, Sri Hari, who had just finished his worship of Lord Sankarsana, Sankarsana Archanam, Sri Hari. Entranced in ecstatic love, Lord Shiva was dancing and loudly singing the glories of his Lord, while his associates played instrumental music and shouted, Jaya, Jaya. With great affection, he praised his assistants like Nandishwar, as well as the goddess Uma, who was expertly clapping her hands. The sight of all this delighted Narada. Vibrating his veena and nodding his head to show respect, he called out several times, you are the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. And in a sweet voice, he recounted to Lord Shiva everything just told by his father, Lord Brahma. In the first chapter, the southern king postulated physical proximity as a sign of the Lord's mercy, Kripa Lakshana, Both Indra and Brahma denied this claim by stating that the Lord's living together with them was based more on pragmatism than love. In this series of verses, it is evident that Lord Shiva does not live together with the Lord. In fact, Shiva engages in the same type of deity worship practiced by the king and the Brahmana from two chapters ago. But the difference is that at the end of the worship, Lord Shiva displayed symptoms of ecstasy, absorbed in a trance of devotional love for Sri Hari. Bhava Vish Tataya Hare. Firstly, this demonstrates how worship of the deity is for both the liberated and the non-liberated devotees. Tampa. Okay. This is, what is this? Ah. Temple worship is one of the duties of a devotee. It is especially recommended for neophytes, but those who are advanced should not refrain from temple worship. There is a distinction in the matter of a neophyte and an advanced devotee. Or in the matter, a neophyte and advanced devotee appreciate the Lord's presence in the temple. A neophyte considers the Arch of Vigraha, the statue of the Lord, to be different from the original personality of Godhead. He considers it a representation of the Supreme Lord in the form of a deity. But an advanced devotee accepts the deity in the temple as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does not see any difference between the original form of the Lord and the statue, or archer form of the Lord in the temple. This is the vision of a devotee whose devotional service is in the highest stage of bhava, or love of God. Whereas a neophyte's worship in the temple is a matter of routine duty. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29:16 purport. And so it's the view, it's not how it's being done. Right? Because sometimes you think, oh, if you're more advanced and you worship in a definite way, you don't worry about the rules. No, it's that you see the Krishna as a person directly. So that's the difference, is that mood is there. So it's not just, I say, as a matter of routine duty. It's something you want to do because the Lord's there.
Maharaj, when we speak about temple worship, is it a different if somebody is doing the arti or somebody is looking at the arti?
No, there's no difference.
No difference.
No, there's no difference.
Temple worship means also to, just to see the deity.
Yes, it means to see. But generally when it's talking about deity worship, it means the performance of deity worship. But in that, then seeing the arti, circumambulating the deity, accepting the remnants from the worship, these are all part of the process. Someone gets benefit from all this. Because right? Otherwise, if you didn't, why is it there's one pujari doing artik and everybody else is, you know, in the temple observing? Because if they didn't get the benefit, then there'd be an immense fight over who gets to offer the artik. You know, or you break it down. One pujari gets to offer one item, you know, as he does. And he goes and then finishes, goes to the other side of the altar, shows the devotees, he walks off, the next one walks in with his item.
It's one circle.
Yeah. Again, the next one. Okay. Yes. It was like that in Los Angeles. There were so many devotees that one devotee would be cleaning the kitchen, another one would cut up the vegetables, another one would cook, another one would make the plate, another one would take the plate onto the altar, another one would do the offering, another one would take off the altar, another one would transfer it, different one would do the artik, like that, you know, it was because they had so many devotees that wanted to do the worship that it was like that.
But in the past.
Yeah, no, I'm talking 30 years ago. Yeah, that's it. But that's all the backup is broken. But the puja, that's the same people doing. The backup, because that always changes. And it's like, you know, I think the guy that washes the pots, you know, he's been there forever. Everybody else keeps changing. I think also the Bhaktiji does the outfits. I think the day outfits that she's in. She's still here? Oh, okay. No, she's arranging. Since he is non-different from the personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva is not obliged to worship Lord Shankarsana to become purified from material illusion. Footnote 3. The non-difference between Shiva and Vishnu is stated in many places. For example, in the Padma Purana, Brahmakanda 25:15. One sees differences between any of Lord Shiva's qualities and names and those of Shri Vishnu as an antagonist to Harinam. There are no similar injunctions about the non-difference of Brahma and Vishnu. Moreover, Shiva instructs the Pajetas. A person who strictly executes his occupational duty without deviation for 100 births becomes qualified to occupy the post of Brahma. And if he becomes more qualified, he can approach me, Lord Shiva. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-9. These words state that a jiva can join Lord Shiva, not that he can become Lord Shiva. Brahma has nominated Shiva as the supreme recipient of the Lord's mercy because Lord Shiva is a special incarnation of the Lord in the form of his own devotee.
Nominated means described. It doesn't mean that Brahma has any say in it.
No, nominated means that you bring it up.
Yeah.
You say it. Yeah. Like that. Because otherwise, here Shiva, no one ever becomes Shiva, right? The expansion who destroys the universe. If there's a really qualified soul, they might do, but generally it never happens, right? But Brahma then is regularly will be a jiva. Though if there's no qualified jiva, then Lord Vishnu takes the post. Lord Shiva performs worship externally with standard paraphernalia to educate the world about the transcendental tastes of devotional service. Footnote 4. Srila Prabhupada explains that there are instances of devotees foregoing deity worship. To live with devotees or to live in a temple means to associate with the Shravanam Kirtanam process. Sometimes neophyte devotees think that they can continue the Shravana Kirtana process without worshipping the deity. But the execution of Shravana Kirtana is meant for highly developed devotees like Haridas Thakur, who engaged in the Shravana Kirtana process without worshipping the deity. However, one should not falsely imitate Haridas Thakur and abandon deity worship just to try to engage in Shravana Kirtana. This is not possible for neophyte devotees. C.C. Madhya Lila 19.152.4.
Here is deity worship in the Pancharatra program.
Yes. Like that. See, because you have the thing is where you can, where one would have to appreciate this position, because Haridas Thakur was just sitting and chanting. He didn't even go into the temple. But he didn't go and worship the deity. The deity came to his ashram. Right? So if the Lord comes and visits your house every day, you know, and then you're not engaged in deity worship, then fine. But if he's not coming personally to visit, then better we are involved in the process. That might be stretching it. You know. As long as you also take prashad on the internet and you know, everything else on the internet.
Wonder.
Yeah. They made movies about that. Shiva, after concluding his worship, was, quote, dancing and loudly singing the glories of his Lord, end quote. He and his associates were thus engaged in Shravana Kirtana Vishnu, the ultimate aim of deity worship. Srila Prabhupada explains the historical relationship between Archanam and Kirtanam in the following purport. Formerly, all activities were performed in connection with Vishnu. But after Satyayuga, there were symptoms of disrespectful dealings amongst Vaishnavas. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that a Vaishnava is he who has helped others become Vaishnavas. An example of one who has converted many others into Vaishnavas is Narad Muni. A powerful Vaishnava who has converted others into Vaishnavas is to be worshipped, but because of material contamination, sometimes such an exalted Vaishnava is disrespected by other minor Vaishnavas. A great saintly person saw this contamination. They introduced worship of the deity in the temple. Such neophytes are described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Quote, "For those who cannot properly appreciate the activities of authorized devotees, deity worship is the only way for spiritual advancement." End quote. This began in Treta Yuga and was especially prominent in Dwapara Yuga. Dwapare Pancharayam. No. Dwapare Pari Charyayam. But in Kali Yuga, worship of the deity is being neglected. Therefore, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra is more powerful than deity worship. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu set a practical example in that he did not establish any temples or deities, but he profusely introduced the Sankirtan movement. Therefore, Krishna conscious preachers should give more stress to the Sankirtan movement, especially by distributing transcendental literature more and more. This helps the Sankirtana movement. Whenever there is a possibility to worship the deity, we may establish many centers, but generally we should give more stress to the distribution of transcendental literature, for this will be more effective in converting people to Krishna consciousness. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:14-39. Lastly, it should be noted that Lord Shiva's followers on Shiva Loka were not ghosts and demons, but Vaishnavas, who deeply imbibed their master's mood of pure Vishnu bhakti. Witnessing this, Narada, because that's within the material world, then you have all these ghosts and demons, because otherwise then you fear. Witnessing this, Narada also became ecstatic. He danced so enthusiastically that he was unable to offer prostrate obeisances. And since he did not want to stop playing his veena, he simply showed respect by nodding his head. He then proceeded to recount what Brahma had told him about Lord Shiva's glories. 5-6. Narada came closer, hoping to touch the dust of the lotus feet of Lord Shiva, the best friend of the Vaishnavas. But as the sage came near, Lord Shiva, a flood of Krishna conscious pleasure driving him wild, forcibly drew Narada closer and embraced him. Without hesitating, he asked Narada with respect, "Dear son of Brahma, what are you saying?" Absorbed in the taste of talking with that superlative Vaishnav Narada, Lord Shiva then stopped his playful dancing and sat down. He sat on a straw mat in the Virasana posture, and a few of his gentle companions seated themselves around him. With devotion, Narada bowed down to Lord Shiva, the life and soul of Parvati, and chanted the six-syllable Rudra mantra. 5. The Rudra Angastaka is a mantra of the Vedas. It begins with the words Namaste. Narada praises Lord Shiva, who becomes angry. They're devotees of Lord Shiva.
As
non-different from the Lord, but as a devotee of the Lord. Maybe it's a thing, it may be something that happens from that sampradaya, I'm not sure. I mean, we don't hear and talk about it, so it's not something within our life. Narada then recited prayers glorifying Lord Shiva as the supreme controller of the universe, and elaborately proclaimed the fullness of the mercy bestowed upon Shiva by Lord Krishna. Lord Rudra, the best of Vaishnavas, the initiator of devotional service to Vishnu, had once covered his ears and angrily replied. Sri Rudra said, "I am not the Lord of the universe, nor an object of Krishna's mercy. I am just a poor soul, always hankering for the favor of the servants of his servants." Footnote 6. Lord Shiva echoes this sentiment in the Rudra Gita of the fourth canto. "My dear Lord, your lotus feet are the cause of all auspicious things and the destroyer of all the contamination of sin. I therefore beg your lordship to bless me by the association of your devotees. who are completely purified by worshipping the lotus feet, and who are so merciful upon the conditioned souls. I think that your real benediction will be to allow me to associate with such devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 424.58. This admission of Lord Shiva's marks the primary distinction between material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. Indra and Brahma admitted to harboring selfish desires for bhukti and mukti respectively, while Shiva states that his desire is to obtain the favor of the servants of the Lord's servants. But
so we see is that, you know, we are progressing through these different stages of realization. But so that's what's the catch. And that the natural humility of the devotee.
The nature...
This is the beginning of the spiritual consciousness.
Of?
Spiritual consciousness.
No, well, the others will be spiritual, but you won't have other aspects to them. This will be pure spiritual, it said. Because the others, the other previous four levels were all devotees, like that. But it's just a matter of these aspects of the devotees, because here we're not really talking about opulence and things like that, that you saw before, like that. Because here it's that they're coming and sitting, and he's just sitting on a grass mat, right? That means it's on the floor in what is it? Virasana. Right? So then it's not like the other places where they're sitting on these wonderful asans and the opulence and all that. So here it's just all about the worship of the Lord. So these other aspects that are there is that when the Lord's pleased, then naturally disturbances are removed and facility is provided. Then we've gone to the limit of that, you know, and other aspects that might come up, right? And so different aspects, and then seeing different ways in which that is glorious, but at the same time is it has its limitation, right? Just so that we're convinced that there's something more, right? There's something beyond, right? You know, that there is life after shopping. You know, that's still... Yeah? Okay.
Can we say, in a sense, that this line of opulence that we went through these four levels?
Yes.
It started by Brahma and Kriya.
Yes.
Because you pointed out that this is opulence there in the south of King. But usually, we don't talk that much about opulence as being a sign of emotion.
No, we just talk about it as something we want. We haven't brought it to the devotional level yet. Right? Now it's like, why is that such a big house? You know, why is that? That's not devotional. Like that. So we start from that level.
Huh?
Yeah. No, I say. But it's, how you say, it is a popular platform. We have to give respect to Robespierre. He started that kind of viewpoint, you know, within the... You know, Western world and all that. So, it is a popular thing rather than, you know, if somebody has facility, why is that? Krishna is kind of that. Right? So everybody gets what they want. Somebody wants that, somebody doesn't want that. You know, the point is everybody gets, you know, some kind of facility and things like that. The point is if someone has facility to do a service, then that's nice. You know, Ambarish, she has money. You know, as far as anybody who's, you could say, a seriously practicing devotee, I don't think anybody has more. But you see, he's using it so nicely, like that. So, like that, But no, we generally don't see like this. Because the element is we're looking at more the renunciation. Because technically we're a line of tyagis. Like if you go to, you know, Kumbh Mela, because they have everybody categorized by the kind of sadhus they are, our line, we're in the line of tyagis. they'll consider us renunciates.
They have lines that are not. Yeah.
They have other names, but we come in that line. Now, you know, you have the Shaivites, you have this, you have that, but we're Tyagis. So, what to do? Yeah, so then it's there. So it's not about means we're pushti marg, but it's from the element of the spontaneity of devotional service rather than pushti means having a nice facility. The Vallabhas and the pushti, they have nice facility, opulence, and those kind of things. So it's a grihasta-based movement. But for us, it's a renunciate-based movement. Okay. Is that, does it make sense? But it accommodates everything. But it just means, even we have everything, it's still the mood is that it's for Krishna's. So it's a different kind of worship. Is that? So each has its flavor. The nature of these desires are compared in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakala Ashanta. Because a devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. Fruit of workers desire material enjoyment, jnanis desire liberation, and yogis desire material opulence. Therefore, they are all lusty and cannot be peaceful. Shiva has no desire for bhukti and mukti, yet he still maintains the desire to obtain the favor of the Lord's servants. Does this qualify as being desireless? Srila Prabhupada answers, the devotee of Lord Krishna has no desire other than serving Krishna. Why? Oh, okay. Why should the devotee aspire for something good for himself? His only business is to please the Supreme by rendering as much service as possible. A Krishna Bhakta has no desire for his own personal benefit. He's completely protected by the Supreme. Avasya Rakibe Krishna Vishvasa Palan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that he is desireless because Krishna will give him protection in all circumstances. It is not that he expects any assistance from Krishna. He simply depends on Krishna just as a child depends on his parents. The child does not know how to expect service from his parents, but he is always protected nevertheless. This is called nishkam, desireless. Madhyalila 19.149. So he's just dependent on Krishna. It's not that he's expecting something, just like he says. The child doesn't know what to expect. They just depend on the parents and things are taken care of. Srila Prabhupada explains how even higher than the desire to serve Krishna is the desire to serve his servants. In the Padma Puran, Lord Shiva explains to his wife Parvati, the goddess Durga, that the highest goal of life is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, who can be satisfied only when his servant is satisfied. Tasmat parataram devi tariyanam samarchanam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore teaches Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa. One must become a servant of the servants. Prahlad Maharaj also prayed to Lord Nrisimhadev that he might be engaged as the servant of the Lord's servant. This is the prescribed method of devotional service. As soon as a devotee wants the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be his order supplier, the Lord immediately refuses to become the master of such a motivated devotee. In Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord says, Yeyitamam prapadyam te tamstataiva bhajamyaham. As one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. Materialistic persons are generally inclined to material profits. As long as one continues in such an adulterated position, he does not receive the benefit of returning home back to Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.10.6 purport. 12. Sri Parikit said, upon hearing this, the sage Narada was shocked. Thinking he had acted offensively, he at once stopped praising Lord Shiva's non-difference from Krishna and began to speak in a soft voice. Sri Narad said, "You certainly know the confidential mysterious glories of Lord Vishnu and the Vaishnavas, and you expertly explain these glories." Narad Muni here identifies another symptom of mercy, engagement in preaching the Lord's glories. Narad Muni previously witnessed Shiva engaged in worship of Lord Sankarsana, but now emphasizes Shiva's liberal distribution of these secrets of devotional service. Deity worship is especially meant for purifying the neophyte devotees. Actually, however, preaching is more important. In Bhagavad Gita 18:69, it is said, "Nachatasman manushyeshu kaschin me priya kritama." If one wants to be recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he must preach the glories of the Lord. One who worships the deity must therefore be extremely respectful to preachers. Otherwise, simply worshiping the deity will keep one in the lower stage of devotion. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.14.40, perfect.
Because you think, I'm already connected to the Lord, everything's done. But you have to appreciate that it's the Lord's devotees that's more important in the relationship. Because the Lord, if you have good relations with the devotees, the Lord is pleased. And then especially the preachers. Because then they're instructing others in how to be part of this whole process.
As one of the 12 authorities on Bhagavad Dharma, Shiva is known for preaching pure religious principles all over the universe. Lord Shiva, by his action within this material world, teaches all conditioned souls how to engage in devotional service 24 hours a day. Therefore, he is described here as Lokamangala, good fortune personified for all conditioned souls. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.6.35, perfect. Yes.
What are his actions?
What are whose actions?
By his actions within this material world.
Because he's always absorbed in thinking of the Lord. And so is serving the Lord. But only the devotees will catch that. Others don't. But at least then he gets shelter and they get benefit because they are worshiping technically in this way the Lord, because he's an incarnation of the Lord. And he's a devotee of the Lord. So they get all this benefit, though, because they don't know they're getting that. It's in Gyakya Sukriti. You know, is that the sense? Yeah, so that way they get some. Just like Lord Buddha, right? They get benefit because they're worshiping the Lord, though they don't know that that's what they're doing. While Narad Muni praises Shiva for his quality of preaching, later on Shiva will reprimand himself for doing just the opposite. 14. The best Vaishnavas therefore aspire for your mercy. Lord Krishna also has great regard for you and extensively spreads your glories. Has Krishna not worshipped you many times in his various incarnations and taken from you many boons? In Vamana Purana, Pulastya Muni explains to Narad how Vishnu obtained Sudarshan Chakra by praying to Lord Shiva. During ancient times, there was a demon king named Sridhama. He ruled over the whole earth. Once he decided to snatch the Srivatsa, Lord Krishna's dearest ornament, from him. When Lord Vishnu came to know about his intention, he became furious, but since he had no weapon at his disposal, he went to take Lord Shiva's help in this regard. Lord Shiva gave Sudarshan Chakra to him and said that with the help of that infallible weapon, he could kill anybody. But Lord Vishnu was not convinced about the weapon's destructive power and expressed his desire to test it on Lord Shiva himself. Lord Shiva agreed and... Lord Shiva agreed and Vishnu released the Sudarshan Chakra towards him. As a result, Lord Shiva's body was severed into three pieces. Vishvesh, Yagyesh, and Yagya. Now Lord Vishnu became satisfied and made salutations to Lord Shiva to express his gratitude. Lord Vishnu then went to the mountain
where the demon Sridhama lived and severed his head with the Sudarshan Chakra. After killing the demon, Lord Vishnu returned to his abode, Kshirasagar. Vamana Puran 122.5.
Kind of has the flavor of it. Is it what mode is this one written in? Do you know? You sure it's one of the seven? It's not. Because it's just how they tell the story has a flavor. Yes.
Yes. And we don't know how is it possible she got that
tradition. Well, I mean, in one sense, being not different from the Lord, then it doesn't matter. So there must be these aspects of worshiping Lord Shiva. You know, Vishva has something to do with the universe, Yajna has to do with sacrifice. And then, I'm not sure what the last one would be. Because Lord Shiva didn't seem to be worried about it, so. Yes, that's why we stick to the Bhagavatam. Stories go much more pleasantly. You know, even if you do have some wild aspects, it's always described nicely. Right? There's a certain flavor that we use. Then that always works, right? But that's the thing, is when you're writing for these different kind of situations, or a taste of the people, you use different methods.
Shiva is not different from his body, like Vishnu.
No, because he's not a jiva. Only jiva is the body, is different. But the internal potency, the Lord Shiva, then they're all they are who they are. Like that.
In addition to Sudarshan Chakra, the Vamana Purana also relates how Krishna obtained a son from Lord Shiva. Lord Krishna wanted to bring about the destruction of the Yadu dynasty so that he could wind up his pastimes on earth and go back to his own abode. Krishna thus desired to have a son to bring this about. After receiving advice from a sage, he entered into seclusion, put ashes all over his body, and clothed himself in tree bark. For years and years he prayed for a glimpse of Lord Shiva in order to ask him a boon. After some years, both Parvati and Shiva appeared. Krishna told Lord Shiva that only he could fulfill his desire. Lord Krishna wanted his son to be exactly like Lord Shiva, whose main function is to destroy creation. Lord Shiva granted Krishna the boon. After some time, Krishna's wife, Jambavati, gave birth to a son named Samba.
Kasamba is the one that played the trick on the sages. So therefore, because it has to come from that element of destruction, therefore, then it's natural to be in that way.
Elephant of destruction.
Yes, the elephant of destruction, yes.
The story of how Samba invited a curse upon the Yadu dynasty is related in the first chapter of the 11th canto. Sri Parikit said,
you're going to have Krishna there's going to be the incarnation of the Dwapara Yuga is always going to be Krishna. Only once in a day with Brahma, then he's Swayam Krishna. So we see in this pastime, we don't see this happening. So this must have happened in one of the other incarnations, right? Does that make sense? You know, a Krishna who is an expansion of Kiradakshaya Vishnu. So a lot of these pastimes that we hear about then are happening with these incarnations. So they're not the pastimes of Swayam Krishna, they're pastimes of his expansions. Mm-hmm. So then you get all these subtle little things. But once they're established, then they're done.
Yes. Just like Samba destroyed the Yadu dynasty, Vishnu uses the chakra to destroy all the demons, that element of destruction comes from Lord Shiva.
Yes, natural it comes there. But ultimately, we know Sudarshan's there before, just like, you know, he comes and he wants all these different things.
Yeah.
But it's just the pastimes of how he gets them, because he uses the human method to get them. Yeah. But otherwise, they're, you know, already there before. 16. Sri Parikit said, hearing this, Lord Shiva could no longer maintain his gravity. Ashamed, he sprang to his feet, covered Narad's mouth with both hands, and said, don't even mention that arrogance of mine. Right, because he's brought some things up, and so now Shiva's not just sitting there and saying, hey, you know, now he just jumps up and covers his mouth. He then boldly told Narada with surprise in his voice, just see the most incomprehensible power of the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Oh, my Lord, right, because we've always heard all these things of how he is the fear personified, is afraid of Krishna. But Krishna runs away to a fort to escape, you know, the attacks of Jarasandha. So in the same way, even though he's the Lord of everything, at the same time as he does these pastimes, where it appears that Shiva is in a stronger position. Like that. Oh, my Lord, 18. Oh, my Lord is so sober. He is such a such a deep and varied ocean of great qualities. Even though I have committed many kinds of offenses against him, he still does not reject me. Lord Shiva considered himself offensive to have shown off his own power before Krishna by offering him benedictions. Other offenses he had committed against the Lord were too painful for him to recall. Hey, he's seeing it this way, but it's how the Lord wanted it to unfold. One, he wants to show the, you know, he's performing human pastimes, he wants to show the glory of Lord Shiva, since Shiva is not different from him. And, you know, a great devotee. So then naturally. But Sri Krishna never considers anything done by Lord Shiva offensive, since Lord Shiva always acts in this world only to promote the cause of Krishna's devotional service, either directly or indirectly. So because Brahma made that point, as I do things, Krishna gets upset with me. Right? It means he gives a benediction to a demon. After Krishna, you know, solves the problem, gets rid of the demon and all that, everybody's there glorifying and jumping up and down. He kind of turns to Brahma's side, don't do that anymore. You know? But Shiva gives benediction, and then Krishna comes and saves him personally. And then, you know, don't worry about it. You know, demons are demons, what to do?
Why is that? Can you say that Brahma is Jiva?
It's not so much that the Jiva is that Shiva is giving shelter to these personalities, so he's very compassionate to them. Brahma's not so much charged, he's charged to see that everything's going on, but it's not as much the element that he specifically specializes in demons. Right? He takes care of the demigods. Right? So he'll tell them, you know, how to behave and, you know, be more careful and stuff like that. That's the thing. Brahma is taking care of all the demigods and that. But who takes care of the demons and everybody else? So Shiva takes care of them. Is there? The Acharyas confirm this in the 10th canto when Shiva opposes Krishna and Balaram in battle on Banasura's behalf. Srila Sridharaswamy states that the word Bhagavan is used here to indicate that Lord Shiva is by nature all-knowing and thus well aware of Lord Krishna's greatness. Still, although Shiva knew Lord Krishna would defeat him, he joined the battle against him to demonstrate the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that Lord Shiva entered the battle for two reasons. First, to increase Lord Krishna's pleasure and enthusiasm, and second,
to demonstrate that the Lord's incarnation as Krishna, although enacting human-like pastimes, is superior to other avatars, such as Lord Ramachandra. So, even though he's non-different from the Lord, still, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he's still, they're all devotees of him. But he's devotee of Sankarshan, who's devotee of Krishna. Right?
How did this show that he's superior to all those?
Because he's the source of that mood. So Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Right? Means you have, you know, Balaram, Ramachandra, they'll all be, you know, supreme personality of Godhead, but not the original. Because the original mood is Krishna. Then these other aspects, even a Paravastha, these are expansions. You could say him in different moods, but the original moods, so they're not expansions, they're just different moods. Then after that, then Balaram will be that first expansion. Yes?
One other connection is that Ramchandra worships Rameshwar in South India,
okay.
Shiva Linga.
Yeah.
And here Krishna is defeating Shiva in the battle. So one he's praying to, and the other one he's just defeating him.
Yeah. Yes. And then you also, I'm not sure because this is bond, yeah. Yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti further states in this regard that Yoga Maya, Lord Krishna's internal potency, bewildered Lord Shiva just as she had bewildered Brahma. In support of this statement, the Acharya cites the phrase Brahma Rudradi Mohanam from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Of course, Yogamaya's job is to make fine arrangements for the Lord's pastimes, and thus Lord Shiva became enthusiastic to battle the Supreme Lord, Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.63.6, purport. Krishna himself glorifies Shiva's unique transcendental position, even after bewildering him with his form as Mohini Murti. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O best of the demigods, although you have been amply harassed because of my potency in assuming the form of a woman, you are established in your position. Therefore, may all good fortune be upon you. My dear Lord Shambhu, who within this material world but you can surpass my illusory energy? People are generally attached to sense enjoyment and conquered by its influence. Indeed, the influence of material nature is very difficult for them to surmount. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.12.38.39. Srila Prabhupada comments, the living entities are affected by Maya, but although Lord Shiva apparently associates with Maya, he is not affected. In other words, all living entities within this material world except for Lord Shiva are swayed by Maya. 8.12.39. So here he's not bewildered by Maya. He's bewildered by the Lord himself and his own aspect of the Yoga Maya. So that way then it shows how Krishna is then is supreme, you know, that he is the superior of
the bewildering potency of Maya is coming from Krishna.
Yes. So it's just like even when Krishna expands his Yoga Maya, Balaram can't understand what's going on. But being the Supreme Lord, he can understand something is going on. Right? So that's there.
Yes.
But that's his position. So here, Lord Shiva is not disturbed because he feels he's only been defeated by Krishna. And so Krishna being his Lord, then that's not a problem.
Right?
Yeah. 19. Sri Parikit said, seeing Lord Shiva completely absorbed in the transcendental taste of pure devotion to Krishna, Narada, pleased beyond limit, grasped Lord Shiva's feet, made him sit down again, and spoke to appease him. Narada argues that Shiva is very dear to Krishna. 20 through 31. Sri Narada said, you are so dear to Lord Achyuta. Is it possible you could ever offend him? Though people sometimes see that they are, they, Though people sometimes see what they think are your offenses, he never sees them at all. Shiva is known to offer benedictions to Vishnu, and in other cases directly oppose him in battle. Just as Shiva Tattva is a complex subject, so too are Shiva's activities bewildering upon initial inspection. Narad Muni will here shed light on the true devotional mood underlying all such quote-unquote offensive acts. Right? Yeah. 21-22. Bana was a cause of trouble for saintly persons. Too proud of the strength of his arms, he used magic to arrest Aniruddha and fight against Krishna, the wielder of the disc. When you saw that Bana, your devotee, whom you had maintained like a son, was on the verge of being killed, to save his life, you offered prayers to Sri Hari. At once, Lord Krishna put aside his anger. Now please, the Lord gave Bana a form like his own and raised him to being one of your associates, a position rarely obtained even by demigods. The Banasura pastime in the 10th canto proves just how dear Shiva is to Krishna. Shiva is siding with the enemy. If 100 sons of King Bali, of the 100 sons of King Bali, the oldest was Banasura. He was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, who favored Bana so much that even demigods like Indra would serve him. Banasura once satisfied Shiva by playing musical instruments with his 1,000 hands, while Shiva danced his Tandava Nritya. In response, Shiva offered Bana whatever benediction he chose, and Bana asked Shiva to become the guardian of his city. One day, when Bana was feeling an urge to do battle, he told Lord Shiva, "Except for you, in the whole world there is no warrior strong enough to fight me. Therefore, these 1,000 arms you've given me are merely a heavy burden." Angered by these words, Lord Shiva replied, "Your pride will be crushed in battle when you meet my equal. Indeed, your chariot flag will fall to the ground, broken." Srimad Bhagavatam 10:63. Right, because he's such a great fighter, then, you know, even for them, they become inspired at this. Because it means he's such a great, there's no one on the planet that can fight with him. So if someone could do that, how great a fighter are they? So then, you know, he'll have a good time. Eventually, Banasura takes prisoner Krishna's grandson, Aniruddha, after learning of his affair with his daughter, Usha. This leads to a fierce battle, pitting Shiva and his forces against Krishna. Balaram and the Yadu clan. Krishna, rather than destroy Banasura, instead gives him a boon. Despite Bana's long list of offenses against Vishnu and the Vaishnavas, his saving grace was that he happened to be connected to two great devotees, Shiva and Prahlad. Lord Krishna had already lifted his Sudarshan disc to kill Bana, but at that moment Lord Shiva interceded on behalf of his devotee. Shiva concludes his appeal for the Lord's compassion thusly, This Banasura is my dear and faithful follower, and I have awarded him freedom from fear. Therefore, my Lord, please grant him your mercy, just as you showed mercy to Prahlad, the Lord of the demons. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:63-45. Krishna responds, "My dear Lord, Bhagavan, for your pleasure, we must certainly do what you have requested of us. I fully agree with your conclusion." Right? It means he's given him a benediction, so to keep that intact, then he's asking that remain. "I will not kill this demoniac son of Vairochani, for I gave Prahlad Maharaj the benediction that I would not kill any of his descendants. This demon, who still has 4 arms, will be immune to old age and death, and he will serve as one of your principal attendants. Thus you will have nothing to fear on any account." Right, so he wouldn't kill the descendants, so therefore to please Prahlad Maharaj and to please Lord Shiva. So it's to please the devotees that he does this. Thus it takes, yes.
So this Bana is serving Lord Shiva in the Shivaloka?
That I'm not sure. You kind of get that idea that he might be on that position. But if not, there's every chance he's still around somewhere. Because they live on a different planetary system. So. I don't think it's so much. That's no.
One point in that respect is that Krishna chops off all his arms except for four, so he's a four-armed figure.
Yeah.
Some possibility.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. But it's, yeah, so he's still special.
Yeah.
He's got four arms. But if it's 1,000 arms, it's a frustration for him because who does he fight with? He would sometimes go out and just smash mountains into dust because there was no one to fight with, you know, because he got these 1,000 arms and he'll be the most powerful, but then who can fight with him? So therefore.
Get rid of them.
Huh?
Yeah, get rid of them.
Yeah, that's it. Through this pastime, Shiva educated the demon about Lord Krishna's supreme position and also revealed the glories of Krishna's devotees like Prahlad Maharaj. What? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, because that's the point is that, but the thing is he's pleasing devotees. So even here with Bana, he's pleasing Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Shiva.
Wow. So you said that Lord Shiva is especially kind to the demons because of his compassion?
Compassion, because no one else is showing them any compassion. Who else is going to take care of them? So they're all the Lord's living entities. So the Lord has compassion for them, but they're not behaving in the proper way. So therefore, Lord Shiva takes care of them. Yes?
Now I see this means that the demon accepts to be cared by Lord Shiva. Is there some humility to accept?
Yes, means because for most of them they see Shiva as supreme, like that, because they don't know about Lord Hari. Like that's the thing. So Shiva takes care. They deal nicely. You respond nicely, like Duryodhana with Balaram. It's the same kind of principle, right? He doesn't have the qualities to deal properly with Krishna, but he'll deal with Balaram, because Balaram does that aspect of Shiva there. So he'll take care of these. But he's not taking care and they're behaving badly. He doesn't get that as a problem. Like, Sukracharya sometimes runs into that as a problem. He's taking care of them, but then they always do something to annoy him. Right? They don't respect him properly. But here Shiva doesn't have that problem. When such enemies of the Vaishnavas as Gargya, when such enemies of the Vaishnavas as Gargya worshipped you by severe penances, the benedictions you gave them were not without loopholes. Narad Muni continues to explain the mysterious dealings between Lord Shiva and the demons. Lord Shiva awards myriad benedictions upon the enemies of Krishna. Banasura, Rikasura, Tripurasura, Ravana, Salva, Gargya, Jayadratha, Sudakshina, and so on. In the Bhagavatam it is explained. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are very quick to curse or bestow benedictions. My dear King, but the infallible Supreme Lord is not. Shiva quickly becomes pleased by seeing his worshippers' slightest good qualities. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:88, 12, and 15. In this verse, Lord Shiva is described as Midushtama, the best of the benedictors. He is also known as Ashutosh, which indicates that he is very quickly satisfied and very quickly angered. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:76 purport. Shiva will undoubtedly cite his beneficence towards the demons as evidence for his being an offender against the Lord.
However, Narad Muni preempts this objective by praising Shiva's cleverness. All the boons he offered the demons come with dangerous caveats, namely causing their own downfall. The imperfect boon mentioned in this verse is Lord Shiva's blessing on Gargya. According to the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 2.1, Gargya Balaki was a learned son of the sage Garga, who was too proud of his acquired knowledge. By Lord Shiva's mercy, Gargya obtained a son, but not one who could destroy the Yadu dynasty as Gargya wanted, only one who could frighten and frustrate the Yadus.
Because there's different meanings to the words. Does that make sense? In Sanskrit, you have a word, and they'll say, "I want this," and so you can take that word, but you can also fulfill it in, you take it in its other meanings, a derivative. So in one sense, he has given the benediction, but at the same time, he's also not given it. So in that way, he's very clever.
Similarly, Shiva offered Jayadratha the limited boon that he could defeat each of the Pandavas except Arjuna. Jayadratha was dissatisfied, insisting that Shiva also grant him immunity from death at the hands of Arjuna or anyone else. Shiva offered the boon that whomever should cut off Jayadratha's head die on the spot, and Jayadratha would be revived immediately. The only exception would be if Jayadratha's father were to throw his head anywhere. Then Jayadratha would be killed. Jayadratha accepted, thinking to himself that his father would never do such a thing.
Right, so he hasn't given the direct boon, he's given it in an indirect way.
Jayadratha accepted, thinking to himself that his father would never do such a thing. Eventually, by the Lord's arrangement, this is exactly what came to pass. Because then Arjuna cut off his head, and then before it hit the ground, you know, shot it with arrows until it landed on Jayadratha's father's lap. He was meditating. Was there, he just sees some head. He doesn't catch it, it throws it off his lap. So then, because it said, whoever throws his head on the ground, their head will split into, I think, 10,000 pieces. But if it's anybody else, when their head splits into 10,000 pieces, Jayadratha will come back to life. But because it was his father, then both his father and him died. So. Yes. In the 10th canto, after Krishna kills Paundrika and the king of Kashi, the prince of Kashi, Sudakshina, elicits Shiva's help in exacting his revenge. The following is an abridged excerpt from Krishna book. After observing the ritualistic funeral ceremonies, Sudakshina took a vow that since Krishna was the enemy of his father, he would kill Krishna and in this way liquidate his debt to his father. Therefore, accompanied by a learned priest qualified to help him, began to worship Mahadev, Lord Shiva. Sudakshina's purpose was to kill Krishna, and therefore he prayed for a specific power by which to kill him. Lord Shiva advised that Sudakshina, assisted by the brahmanas, execute the ritualistic ceremony for killing one's enemy. Lord Shiva informed Sudakshina that if such a black ritualistic ceremony were performed properly, then the evil spirit named Dakshinagni would appear and then carry out any order given to him. He would have to be employed, however, to kill someone other than a qualified brahmana. If all these conditions were met, then Dakshinagni, accompanied by Lord Shiva's ghostly companions, could fulfill the desire of Sudakshina to kill his enemy. He didn't say it would kill Krishna. He just said, right? When Sudakshina was encouraged by Lord Shiva in that way, he was sure that he would be able to kill Krishna. With a determined vow of austerity, he began to execute the black art of chanting mantras, assisted by the priests. After this, out of the fire came a great demoniac form, whose hair, beard, and mustache were exactly the color of hot copper. He was naked, and he carried a big trident, blazing like fire. Instigated by Sudakshina, the demon proceeded towards the capital city, Dwarka, with many hundreds of ghostly companions, and it appeared that he was going to burn all outer space to ashes. When he entered the city of Dwarka, all the residents panicked, just like animals in a forest fire. At that time, Krishna was playing chess in the Royal Assembly Council Hall. All the residents of Dwarka approached and addressed him, "Dear Lord of the Three Worlds, a great fiery demon is ready to burn the whole city of Dwarka. Please save us." Krishna immediately smiled and assured them, "Don't worry, I shall give you all protection." He could understand that the fiery demon was a creation of Lord Shiva, and in order to vanquish the demon, he took a Sudarshan Chakra and ordered him to take the next. He told his Sudarshan Chakra and ordered him to take the necessary steps. Footnote 7. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments that Lord Krishna, playing the part of a king, was absorbed in a gambling match and did not want to be disturbed by such an insignificant matter as the attack of a fiery demon. So he simply dispatched his chakra weapon and ordered him to take the necessary steps. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.66.38 purport. But it says, you know, he's busy. You know, because he's dealing with the devotees and all that. And it's not that this demon is specifically about Krishna. He's just being sent by someone else. It's not that he's thinking of Krishna as enmity towards Krishna, so therefore Krishna will come and reciprocate.
There's no relationship.
Yeah, there's not specifically any relationship. So then, then the Sudarshan Chakra began to freeze the fiery demon created by Lord Shiva. In this way, the fiery demon was checked by the Sudarshan Chakra of Lord Krishna, and being defeated in his attempt to devastate the city of Dwarka, he turned back. Having failed to set fire to Dwarka, the fiery demon went back to Varanasi, the kingdom of Kashi Raj. As a result of his return, all the priests who had helped instruct the black art of mantras, along with their employer, Sudakshina, were burnt to ashes by the glaring effulgence of the fiery demon. According to the methods of black art mantras instructed in the tantras, if the mantra fails to kill the enemy, then, because it must kill someone, it kills the original creator. Sudakshina was the originator, and the priests assisted him. Therefore, all of them were burnt to ashes. This is the way of the demons. The demons create something to kill God, but by the same weapon, the demons themselves are killed. Krishna, chapter 66. In other cases, Shiva's liberal bestowal of boons sometimes come back to haunt him. For example, Ravana worshipped Lord Shiva to gain power, but then turned that power against him to uproot his residence, sacred Kailash Parvat. Another example of Shiva's self-endangerment is in the Vrikasura pastime from the 10th canto. The benediction of sinful Vrika chose from the Lord would terrify all living beings. Vrika said, "May death come to whomever I touch upon the head with my hand." I guess he never figured out he'd never be able to pat his kids on the head. Upon hearing this, Lord Rudra seemed somewhat disturbed. Nonetheless, O descendant of Bharata, vibrated Om to signify his assent, granting Vrika the benediction with an ironic smile, as if giving milk to a poisonous snake. To test Lord Shambhu's benediction, the demon then tried to put his hand on the Lord's head. Thus Shiva was frightened because of what he himself had done. As the demon pursued him, Lord Shiva fled swiftly from his abode in the north, shaking with terror. He ran as far as the limits of the earth, the sky, and the corners of the universe. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.21-24. Subsequently, the Lord intervenes in the form of a brahmacharya. After pacifying the demon and hearing his story, Vishnu takes the opportunity to poke fun at Shiva, replying, If this is the case, we cannot believe what Shiva says. Shiva is the same Lord of the Pretas and Paisachas whom Daksha cursed to become like a carnivorous hobgoblin. But best of the demons, if you have any faith in him, because he is the spiritual master of the universe, then without delay put your hand on your head and see what happens. the words of Shiva prove untrue in any way, O best of the demons, then kill the liar so he may never lie again. But if you have faith that that what he says is true, they get bewildered, because otherwise you have faith. Yes, whoever's head he touches will crack into 10,000 pieces. Then if he has faith, then that's what would happen. You know, but if your head doesn't crack into 10,000 pieces, then he is lying. So therefore, now you go and punish him. Thus bewildered by the personality of Godhead's enchanting, artful words, foolish Vrika, without realizing what he was doing, placed his hand on his head. Instantly his head shattered as if struck by a lightning bolt, and the demon fell down dead. From the skies were heard cries of victory, obeisances, and well done. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:88, 32-36. The Lord is more amused by this pastime than anything as he proceeds to praise Shiva. Just see, O Mahadev, my Lord, how this wicked man has been killed by his own sinful reactions. Indeed, what living entity can hope for good fortune if he offends exalted saints? What to speak of offending the Lord and spiritual master of the universe? So if he just used it to go back, you know, to his place, and then just anybody who bothers him then crack their head, then, you know, would have had a whole different kind of story. But here, he bothers Lord Shiva, right? He was such a great saintly person and spiritual master of the universe, right? In their purport to this verse, the Acharyas reveal how dear Shiva is to the Supreme Lord. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti, the statement of Lord Vishnu implies a mild scolding. My dear possessor of unlimited vision, as you of clear intelligence, benedictions should not be given to wicked demons in this way. You could have been killed, but you were only concerned about saving this poor soul, so you disregarded what would happen to you as a result. Thus, Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti points out, Lord Narayana's mild rebuke also highlighted Lord Shiva's exceptional compassion. So that's the aspect, is that it's still due to his compassion. Right? The above pastimes of Lord Shiva demonstrate how devotion to the Supreme Lord is difficult to judge based on externals. Bhakti is mysterious, takes many forms, and requires the insights of exalted devotees like Narad Muni to fully recognize and appreciate. Srila Prabhupada states in the purport, it is said, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra Vigneha Nabhujaya. One should not be astonished to see the activities of exalted, liberated Vaishnavas. C.C. Madhya Lila 23:39. Even the most learned man cannot understand the words, vakya, activities, kriya, and symptoms, mudra, of a person situated in love of God, Godhead. End quote. As one should not be misled by the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should not be misled by the activities of his devotees. Both the Lord and his devotees are liberated. They are on the same platform. The only difference being that the Lord is the master and the devotees are servants. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17, 34-35. A prime example found in Srimad Bhagavatam of such a perplexing devotee is the demon Vritasura. Significantly, the so-called offense which sets this entire pastime in motion was committed against Lord Shiva. Vritasura, as Maharaj Chitraketu in his previous life, directed some inappropriate remarks at Shiva based on his external circumstances, instructing renounced sages while embracing his wife Parvati on his lap. Narad Muni points out that Shiva's tolerant reaction is further evidence of the great mercy he has received from Krishna. Although Chitraketu and others like him foolishly dared criticize you, you never became angry at them because they were surrendered devotees of preliminary portions of Lord Hari. Shiva is here glorified for his tolerance and equanimity in the face of provocation. In the Bhagavatam, Lord Shiva is insulted on at least two occasions, by Prajapati Daksha in the sacrificial arena, and by Maharaj Chitraketu in the bowers of Sumeru Mountain. footnote 8. The Acharyas point out, however, that the severity each of these offenses was tempered by its perpetrator's attitude. Chitraketu appreciated. I think it's losing time. Yeah, so maybe we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura ki.